Hello, everyone. This is Cameron Marceau with Black Liver Project doing another episode of Monster in a Glass podcast. This cocktail is more like a big one. It's supposed to be made in a giant bowl. It's Fish House Punch.
Make it in a giant bowl. Make it drink in a... drink it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. A flowing bowl.
And if you survive.
So this is Jason Cruz, who's topping off each show. Is that right? Or are you leading off the show? Is topping off and leading off the same thing?
Well, topping off seems like something you do with a cocktail, so...
Or something, but that would be something you do at the end.
Yeah.
So maybe we're leading. Okay.
Sure.
Anyway, it's the Fish House Punch. Where does this come from?
It's actually a colonial, colonial punch, which is pretty cool.
So it's another old one.
It's old. And again, when you sent me, I was like, Fish House Punch, ugh. Like, thinking of fish and cocktails.
Like lobster and octopus.
Yeah, I was like, oh, man, what are you...
Mixed in with rum and...
Yeah, I hope this isn't what I think it was. And it wasn't at all. It was not. There's quite a few ingredients. And I'm going to give you the ingredients that Ted Haig puts in, which are not too... It's not too different from the ingredients that everybody else uses. So it's Jamaican rum, brandy, peach brandy, maraschino liqueur, freshly made green tea, lemon juice...
What?
1 pound powdered non-confectioner sugar, 1 bottle of champagne.
Wait a minute. Green tea?
Green tea is actually... I didn't find that in any other recipe. The recipe he's using is from...
How is that colonial?
It's not. It was not something that showed up in there. Now, that being said, there are lots of other punches that do have green tea in them.
Really?
Yeah.
I do not think of that as a punch ingredient.
No, but it shows up later. You see it here and there in recipe books, but they're punches. There's 20 other ingredients. There's lots of fruit. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the tea adds, necessarily. But you don't see it till at least...
Antioxidants.
Well, you got to be healthy when you're drinking punch that will make you blind. Yeah. Because there are several liquors in these punches. Uh-huh. But the green tea doesn't really show up until late 1800s, early 1900s that I started seeing it. The recipe he's using is from some book that came out in 1893 during the Columbia Exposition. I couldn't find it. It sounds like something that's pretty small. What was the title? It was something very strange, like Beverages and Sandwiches for Your Husband's Friends. and here's the author's name is One Who Knows.
Oh my God.
I was like, that was written by a man. It was clearly written by a man to make it think like, oh, well, a woman wrote this for women. It was silly. I don't know why he chose that recipe. Every other recipe I found had no green tea in it. He also said, and this was a confusing part, which I didn't quite understand, and I had to read it a few times. It says, beyond the general ravages of time and the uncommonness of the little book from whence it came. And he uses whence, which is... Who says whence? This punch and the Jerry Thomas version both have suffered from a 90-year forgotten ingredient, same as the Georgia mint julep. That ingredient is the genuine age peach brandy. I could find no indication that any recipe forgot that there was peach brandy in it. I looked at recipe books from Jerry Thomas
saying that peach brandy is a forgotten spirit that was popular back then, but then...
No, he's saying this punch have suffered from a 90-year forgotten ingredient.
90-year forgotten ingredient.
Oh, maybe. But there was no indication that it was forgotten, because I looked from Jerry Thomas to... I found a recipe from a newspaper in 1976. Okay. All of them had peach brandy in it.
Okay.
Through the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s.
That would mean not forgotten.
Right. So I'm not sure what he means by that.
Maybe just... not used as much.
Possibly. I mean, it could...
I wonder if there were just, like, peach brandy distilleries everywhere, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden now, you know, then
that
over
could
time
be.
There's...
Maybe he was referring to the availability of it.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you publish a recipe doesn't mean that you're going to be able to make it. But that was consistent. Everything had peach brandy, and I think I found one that called for peach liqueur.
Okay.
And that was in, like, the 50s, which... Not too surprising.
Yeah.
But yeah, the green tea was a little weird. So, in the Jerry Thomas book, I found the recipe, which is half a pint of lemon juice.
Jerry Thomas, 18...
62.
62, that's right. Okay.
A half pint of lemon juice, 3/4 pound of white sugar, 1 pint of mixture, which has an asterisk, which he points to, To make this mixture, take a quarter pint of peach brandy, half pint of cognac, and a quarter pint of Jamaican rum, 2.5 pints of cold water. And this is the part where I was like, huh? The above is generally sufficient for one person. I was like, there is, I was counting it up. I was like, quarter pint, half pint, quarter pint of just straight booze. And then it's like, there are so many things in this. It must have been like a tiki drink, like something with a bowl and straws. Because then you
and they brought a cot in with it too. Right. It's for you to like pass out on the, you know, when you're done.
So what's interesting is that I found, so he says that in a very casual, this is above is generally sufficient for one person. I read that
sufficient
and I was like
to kill you.
That was a lot of booze, but I thought I could drink it. It would be sufficient for me, and okay. Then I would probably be done.
Yeah. Okay.
But
maybe then, that's what they were saying.
Then I found a recipe. Identical recipe in 1880, American and other drinks. Upwards of 200 of the most approved recipes for making the principal beverages used in the United States and elsewhere. They have the same recipe, and then almost an identical note. But what's interesting is that there's a little more stress on the quantity. The above is generally enough for one person! !4 times. It's like, don't drink any more than the recipe laid out. Because they do have a lot of recipe books that have for a single drink, uh-huh. And then for if you're making the punch for a lot of people. So by 1880, they probably were making, and then this guy was like, no. That's plenty for one person. Don't try to make any more. You are done. Just make one. It's sufficient for your whole night. Just keep sipping it. It'll be fine. 4! I thought I was like, I've never seen that outside of like really? The last, you know.
That's in 1880?
1880.
Wow.
But a lot of the recipes call for the exact same mixture. I checked like well over a dozen recipe books. Cookbooks have it. A lot of them, because it was apparently famous, and they called it the Philadelphia Fish House.
Yeah, punch doesn't seem like a cocktail. It seems like mm-hmm. like part of a meal. It's an yeah. event, is what and it is. Punch is an event.
When you see those, when the cocktails that we've done, the ones that you go, oh, people drank this at a meal, because they show up in cookbooks. So Straub's Manual of Mixed Drinks from 1913 gives 2 different recipes, and they are actually significantly different. So he gives the recipe for one person, which looks very much like the original recipe, or it's hard to say original recipe because nobody has the original recipe. They
except
have
for what, Colonel Sanders.
Exactly. How many spices?
I don't know.
11 herbs.
11
herbs and brandy.
11 herbs and brandy. Brandy chicken.
Brandy chicken. I gotta say, there's no way to really tell what the original recipe was because it was kind of a secret. It wasn't a secret society, but it was darn near close to being a... It was a gentleman's club where nobody was really allowed in other than the members. So this recipe has sort of been handed down and handed down and handed down. And it hasn't varied much, which it sort of gives you an indication that probably is probably close to the original recipe. But Straub gives 2 recipes. So he gives the original. And the one that is for the punch for a lot of people includes Curacao, Benedictine, Green River whiskey, and granulated sugar as opposed to powdered sugar. Although I think most people used granulated from what I saw. Put the ingredients into an unsealed jug for 10 days, and then shake occasionally, strain through a cheesecloth, and serve in a punch bowl. He has a note in there that says, in the original receipt for the Fish House punch, cider was used in place of champagne, and no water was used.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it made more sense. I mean, if you're in colonial Philadelphia, you're not getting regular shipments of champagne, probably, no. So you're using uh-huh. what's there. Every other ingredient is something that is probably local, so it makes sense, cider. So, the name of the drink, Fish House Punch. So, it is named after the Schuylkill Fishing Club, which they also called the Fish House. And so, some of the things that I found on it, it was an eating club, which flourished.
Can I get behind that?
Yeah, I totally could. No doubt. Eating and drinking clubs, sure.
Yeah.
Fish House Punch, so they have it listed as consisting of light rum, cognac, peach brandy, lime or lemon juice, and sugar steeped together for 3 to 4 hours. So the Schuylkill Fishing Club was started in 1732 in Philadelphia on the Schuylkill River. It started off as the Colony of Schuylkill which were a few of the original settlers of Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and were related to William Penn in a way. Okay. I think one of them was his like secretary, started okay. this club. And
so they were the cool kids.
The cool kids. The very cool kids.
Because, I mean, if you know William Penn.
Right, I mean.
And you're part of the cool.
Yeah.
Cool clique.
So it was a really weird place because it was a club, but they basically claimed they were their own colony, and there weren't that many members.
This sounds like college pranks.
Right. They were the colony. They had their own governor. Said they, it was hard to tell. They said they had statehood, or somebody granted them statehood, but they had their governor. They had their own system of doing things. You know, you were only allowed to get in if you were a member. But it was the Schuylkill Fishing Company, basically. So, you know, harking back to the East India Company, you're a company. You do things. You do whatever you want.
Wait, they were a company?
That's what it says. Schuylkill Fishing Company. Did they like state of Schuylkill.
Did they, like, get incorporated in order to have some rights or something? Is that...
It's possible, because it says it was reformed in 1782 as the Schuylkill Fishing Company in the state of Schuylkill.
Okay.
It suspended activity during most of the War of Independence, and it's still going on today. Though I could not find any information, and actually Haig pointed that out too, and I thought, oh, he's just not looking in the right places. I could not find any information that, other than I'll mention that it still operates today. But I'm guessing if it's like any of the other clubs, you don't talk about it. You're a member, you don't publicize it. But what's interesting, so I started looking at when it came about. Yeah, right, exactly. So there were, during this time period, so 1732, it's very early on in Philadelphia, so I found something that said, some clubs built from existing local networks of gentlemen, as was the case with the Schuylkill Fishing Company, which formed outside Philadelphia by 1732, and whose members constructed rules and regulations for fishing. So they were gentlemen. And that, actually, I had read that in other places, that these gentlemen clubs, especially in Philadelphia, so who do you have in Philadelphia at the time? You have Benjamin Franklin, is mm-hmm. among other people. There was lots of gentlemen clubs, kind of starting late 1720s.
Everybody had to get out of the house? You what know, was it, like barbecue and drinks?
That's it's like, yeah,
go hang out with your friends away from the wife and the kids.
From what I've read in other places, and so I'll read you what they say in this one book. So there were clubs like the Merchants Every Night Club. In 1727, Benjamin Franklin founded the Junto Club, or Junto. It's J-U-N-T-O. I can never remember if it's Junto or Junto. Junto sounds like...
That would be Spanish.
Yeah. It might be Junto. I don't know. The Freemasons organized in Philadelphia in 1730. And then a whole bunch of people who they name, who I recognize the names, but I couldn't tell you what they did. Enoch Flower, Joseph Wharton, Hugh Roberts, helped found the Schuylkill Fishing Company, a social club in 1732. When Dr. Alexander Hamilton visited Philadelphia in 1744, he attended the Governor's Club, which met at a tavern. It says by the mid-18th century, Philadelphia had about a dozen clubs. And what these clubs were in a lot of ways drinking places, but also high society, philosophical discussion. It was a place where people like Benjamin Franklin could go and drink and not be bothered by the common riffraff. If you hung out in just a regular old saloon or tavern, you were rowdy, and you were drunk, and you were obnoxious, and you were stupid. You had nothing good to say. You got drunk until you were kicked out the door. These places were created as a way for men of his standing and his intelligence to have conversations about politics and philosophy and get drunk.
And get rowdy and not get kicked out.
Right, exactly. So the Junto or Junto Club, and anybody else can correct me, I don't know which one it is, was a social and debating society founded by Franklin in 1727, and it was restricted to 12 members who were all his friends, if you didn't...
Imagine that!
And they were all working men. I don't know what... I mean, they. I guess...
Gigolos?
Franklin was a printer, so
yeah.
They were known first as the Leather Aprons. Plan of organization was similar to the Neighborhood Benefit Societies founded at Boston by Cotton Mather, but the thought was directed along deistic and utilitarian lines.
Okay.
So it would so also it did
cutting was, edge philosophy and
yeah,
theology.
It's actually it was the first in 1731 it formed the first subscription library, which was the very first American public library. It also was the forerunner of the American Philosophical Society. So these clubs were a little more than just hanging out and drinking. Okay. But it was elite, and you really only were there if you were a member of a circle. These people drank all the time, but they were a classier drinker than the common man, so in their eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, one of the interesting stories that I came across, and you came across too, was that George Washington drank so much of the fish house punch one time that he couldn't write in his diary for 3 days.
I know that feeling.
That sounds like, to me, I was like,
yeah,
I couldn't update my Facebook
post. All I could write was, so much hangover.
Too much fish house.
Yeah, too much.
Which, who knows, maybe that was in his diaries and they just sort of like, no, we can't put that.
This shows that George Washington drank.
He was the first president, we can't.
Right? He overdid it.
Oh, he was actually, our founding fathers drank a lot.
Oh yeah, but yeah, it was constant. I've heard that the amount of barrels that they would roll out of every Continental Congress was amazing.
Yeah.
It's like everyone to shame. It's like, how the hell do we have a government?
No, I know.
You know?
Well, they were just classier. They held their liquor better than the common men. But what's interesting, when I read that, I was like, eh, that sounds like bullshit. You know, it sounds like one of those stories carried down. It might be true. I did find a quote from a book called Early Philadelphia, It's People, Life, and Progress, from 1917. It says, while Philadelphia was the capital, President Washington was a frequent visitor at the castle, which is what the fish house was called.
The Schuylkill.
The Schuylkill. And both he and Lafayette, who visited them later, were honorary members.
This is Lafayette. Okay, so Marquis de Lafayette, he was the guy who came with the French Navy and Army and saved us from the British during the Revolution. Yes. That's pretty much what happened. Yeah. I mean, the American colonists were stretched thin, and then Lafayette sails in, and a whole bunch of French troops.
Oh, fresh.
But they get off the boats and beat the British back. So they're a huge part of the American Revolution.
The French did that a lot for a lot of different countries. And I don't know why the French specifically were called in, but they did that a lot. And not always successfully, but that was the case. I don't know. They clearly had an interest in the U.S., especially at that early time.
Well, they wanted to bloody Britain's nose.
Right.
I mean, that was the great way. And
that kind of is always the case.
And England was everywhere. And everywhere that France tried to get a toehold, the British would be there, like, in the way. So I think that after a while, the French just kind of were gadflies. Everywhere they could inculcate themselves into British policy and trade. What's and everything. Up, yeah, it's like it's me again. You're having a good day?
Did I wipe out your troops? My bad. I didn't know. Yeah, that happened a lot, and it was always against Britain that they were stepping in, and I think it was just the long history of being in each other's way.
But it's interesting that, okay, so like the Marquis de Lafayette gets off the boat, they win the revolution for us, and then George Washington's like, hey, some cool guys.
Let's go to Schuylkill. And Lafayette were tight. If they were together, they were drinking in the right places.
Yeah.
And from what I can gather, just from reading different things about the fish house punch, it was potent. That's what people kept. I mean, aside from the notes that Jerry Thomas had, and then it's like the later note of, please don't drink more than this if you're one person. There, it just seemed like a lot of people were saying, oh, this is really powerful, it's potent, and just offhand comments. But it is possible that Washington drank so much of this. I mean, if he was there, he was an honorary member. There's also, and I've read this in a couple of places, that there are stories that Washington, during his 1758 campaign to be in the House of Burgesses, the liquor bill that he rang up at a tavern was astronomical. Like, what was not uncommon. During that time period, every politician, that's where they held court. They held court in taverns. They held their campaigns in taverns. And they would buy liquor. They were buying votes. And there was I wish you could remember the name for it. But there's a name for it. And it was just, if you could out-buy your, again, not too different than politics today. If you can buy the most attack ads, you win.
If you can buy the most...
If you can buy the most booze for the people in the bar,
yeah,
you win. You're an everyman, even if they didn't hang out there, but usually they did. It usually was a tavern that they were a part of. So he was... He drank.
Yeah.
And... Well, they all did.
There wasn't much else to do. I mean, it was just butt-ass cold all the time.
Sure. You just got fighting like, a war and
yeah.
got the Brits coming over telling
you. Could you imagine being in Valley Forge?
No, I don't want to.
It just would have been like, it's cold and it's not going to get warmer. And
so, I have a buddy named Lafayette. Cool dude. Cool dude. I know he's French. It's all right.
It's all right.
Don't freak out.
I know we had trouble with him before, the French, but, you know. Yeah,
we'll be.
We're.
Me and him, we go way back. Yeah. We drank some Fish House Punch together. It was yeah. crazy.
It was.
I drank so much, I couldn't update my diary. I was seeing things.
Yeah. It's a couple of things that I saw on with these guys, the Schuylkill guys, and this is in general and kind of through history, just really a couple things. They made the punch in the baptismal font. That seems specious to me, but if that's true, like, that's almost like a satanic cult kind of thing to do.
Sacrilegious.
I know. Yeah, sacrilegious. And then the other interesting thing, though I guess I'm not too surprised, is that Prohibition basically did not affect anything they did.
No, they just
stayed drinking their punch, and they made alcohol, they drank alcohol.
I would have to guess, based on the very limited information and the fact that it lasted for... If it's still going on, that's what, 1732, so...
They're the ones who made Prohibition.
Right. Right.
Like, everyone has to be dry except for us.
Right. I mean, they certainly probably have the means to stockpile. Now. I saw one comment that said that the very limited information, or maybe it's even in here, that it is... So what Haig says, intensely private, its 30 members are well-to-do captains of industry called citizens.
Okay.
Attended by a coterie of apprentices who aspire to be to full honors. It's like the Masons.
Skull and Bones.
Right. It is like all secret societies.
Yeah.
No doubt they had booze during... Every wealthy person during Prohibition had a stockpile. J.P. Morgan, like, basically bought all champagne everywhere in the entire world and then stockpiled it.
Okay.
And, I mean, there were people doing that all over if you had money.
Yeah.
So I'll bet you they distill their own booze right on premises, and they're right on a river, you know, they have water, might not be that clean anymore, but it's, I think they have the means.
They apparently had to move the castle because of sewage contamination at one point, too.
There was also a fire, I think, in the 80s that they had to move it, or maybe that they redid the whole thing into its former glory, but it is neat reading about these things, because, you know, for everybody that... When you hold up the founding fathers as these amazing men, it's like they hung out and drank all the time, and they barely got it together to form a government. They were dudes, and they had money,
and we did not do it with one arm tied behind our back.
Right,
we had foreign help.
Right,
it was
That was.
And now we're talking about secret societies in our cocktail podcast. I hope we don't disappear.
I'm not sure that it's much of a secret society, but you see Mason symbols everywhere. Mm-hmm. You see them on cars, you see them on... They're just, not hiding.
That's just a distraction for the real secret societies.
Oh, right. Oh, like the Fish House.
Fish
House. Right. If it's 30 members. To me, what it seems like, it's probably Philadelphia elite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like all gentlemen clubs, even though... That has a different connotation.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd try this. Not with the green tea. That sounds a little weird.
We're going to try it with the green tea.
That's, really?
Well, yeah.
Oh, well, you're going
it
by the...
It says it.
You're
it,
going literally.
It's here. It says it right
yeah,
here.
All right. Tell me how that tastes, because that... I don't dislike green tea, but I don't get it.
I thought it was strange. But we'll give it a go. We'll go to the Brixton and get blind.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And disappear, maybe.
Yeah, we'll...
If you drink it, do you become a member? Is that how you do it? Like, people were like, I'm not drinking that shit. And they're like, if you drink it, you get to be a member of the Fish House.
A whole new meaning of drink the Kool-Aid.
Drink the Kool-Aid. Drink the Fish House Punch.
Drink the Fish House Punch. Okay, this was a surprise. I looked at our book, and we're not going straight to the tasting team, because this next cocktail actually has to age for some reason. Nicole, our friend here that tastes a lot of the cocktails with us, sent me a link from Alton Brown, who was talking about how old punches, people used to prepare the spirits ahead of time, prepare the mix, and then let it age a couple days to a week or even a couple of months. So I guess that's kind of what's going on, but we're in a different day and age. But anyway, this Fish House Punch, it says it has to sit for 2 days. So that's what we're doing. I'm here at the Brixton with Michael, and he's mixing us some punch.
I have some punch and we're done too, that's for sure.
And I have this plastic container to walk away with it in, put it in my refrigerator.
Yeah, if he leaves it here, someone'll drink it.
Probably me.
It's yeah. I hope this container works, because as I was washing it, my wife was like, "I used to put the cat's food in there." I'm like, oh, lovely. So you know, if on Tuesday when we try it, if it tastes like dry cat food, we'll know exactly what's up.
There is no cat food in the recipe as it calls, so.
No, it's Jamaican rum, brandy, peach brandy, maraschino, green tea. I was talking with Jay, our historian, and we were wondering about the green tea. It doesn't seem like that's kind of a colonial ingredient, really.
Yeah, it seems English. You know, or I would say, I want to say English, but European. I'm thinking like the spices from the spice trade. The
East India? East India Company?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, somewhere along the lines they picked it up for that, you know. Also, if it's something maybe that they're,
if they are storing it, maybe they're making a batch to travel with. You know, that's my only thing, it's just like one of the reasons that they're batching it so big. Making a big punch, maybe for a group of people, but maybe because they're gonna have it for a while and they'll dip at it as they go.
Yeah.
And that, a lot of spices were used in drinks of that nature is more of a preservative, whether they were used correctly or not,
That's true. So I guess there's gonna be three of us on Tuesday.
We'll have plenty. Okay. It's just two or three drinks we're making, so it'll be. I'm gonna have to make some green tea.
Oh, wow. This peach brandy smells delightful.
Yeah.
This smells so good. So Michael is now preparing the green tea. He's brewing it fresh. Oh, that looks lovely.
Yeah, it's a nice little 2 ounces, so a little bit of tea.
How does that smell now? Wow, oh my gosh, that's...
Oh yeah, it's punchy. I'm gonna let this sit for a few minutes here. Make sure we're getting as much. But it's going to be strong tea, so
yeah.
We're looking at 2 ounces of tea, 1/2 ounce of maraschino liquor. So I've got 4 ounces. I've got 4 ounces of rum, Jamaican rum, 2 ounces of brandy, 1/2 ounce of the peach brandy, which is again a real strong flavor. You want to taste some of that?
Yeah, that'd be great. What kind of what kind of spirits did you use in each of these?
The Smith and Cross. Jamaican rum.
They
called for a Jamaican rum. This is a brilliant rum. They talk about the Appleton, which is another Jamaican spice rum that is excellent, but this is a little stronger. That's what I like about that. It's actually over 100 proof. It's like 104 proof, so that gives it some kick. And a big punch like this, you're going to have a lot of different flavors in there, so you can put a little stronger alcohol in there because that heat is going to get drowned out. I also use Christian Brothers brandy.
Okay.
It's a secondary ingredient. You just want a brandy filler. You don't want to use a high-end brandy that would sort of defeat the purpose of it. Palmasan Grande Amber Peach, which is a real light in alcohol, just a simple cordial. We're going to taste that right now. Fresh squeezed lemon juice. We used sort of like a generic green tea. And
Luxardo?
That's right. The maraschino liqueur, we use the Luxardo brand. And then we make our own simple syrup, and we'll top it on Tuesday with like some split of some cuvée split. So it'll be a nice champagne. It'll be a French champagne.
Oh, nice.
And
this smells so good. I'm smelling the peach brandy.
That's real good.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
yeah, I could see
a lot of punch for a lot of flavor for a brandy.
Yeah,
you know, it's like for such a light. So combine in a mason jar and let brew. The party that says that's it. Oh, the tea! I gotta do 2 ounces of tea. I'll put the tea in now. It should be ready.
Oh man, this is good peach brandy.
I'd be interested to see if the tea has anything to do with like I said, it seems like it's almost a. Like it would preserve, you know, but I don't know that you'd make it to preserve it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm interested to see if the tea flavor comes out. It's just a like a spiced water filler, so to speak.
Yeah.
If that's what the impetus of using the tea is, we've made tea drinks before, but they're just the tea, and it's usually a vodka or a rum or something with it. But it's just the tea as opposed to tea being an ingredient. I'm gonna stir this up a little bit in case any of that simple syrup settled.
Okay.
You have not stirred it. It doesn't call to stir or anything. It says to sit and it says combine and let rest. You know, when you get home, if you have something smaller to put that in, you may want to.
Yeah, I've got some jars.
Yeah, I didn't know. I wasn't really sure how much it would make. I saw a bunch of ounces, but then all of a sudden you think like I didn't know if I'd be shaking anything today. So
okay,
that's gonna be it.
That's awesome.
It's gonna work out.
Thank you so much.
Of course. All that, you bring that back and it's like a different color and fills the jug and, you know, crystallized.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had some surprises.
Fish House Punch. 4 ounces. Smith and Cross rum. 2 ounces Christian Brothers Brandy. 1/2 ounce Paul Masson Peach Brandy. 1/2 ounce Luxardo Maraschino Liqueur. 2 ounces Green Tea. 1 ounce Lemon Juice. 1 ounce Simple Syrup. Champagne.
Okay, and we are here at the Brixton with the tasting team. Now, we had a little interlude because we had to mix the punch ahead of time and it had to sit in my refrigerator. So we're back again. This is a three-part show, but now we're ready to actually drink the damn punch.
Sounds good.
So with me this evening is Nicole Pizzini.
Hi!
Nicole, have you ever been in a club or secret society?
Like intramural shit in high school. I don't think that counts as secret. I was really big in marching bands.
That can be pretty...
Oh yeah.
There's some serious stuff in there.
We were quite a society.
Yeah. Lots of secrets. Lots of... questionable behavior, I'm sure. I'm also here with Kevin Ratajczyk.
Hey!
How about you? Any secret societies?
Does D&D count?
Not anymore.
No. Actually, that's true.
It used to be. Now we're all out in the open.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it used to be like very hush-hush. I stopped that crap in college. I wanted to get laid.
Yeah.
But now, you know, everybody's out in the open. We all carry our dice bags.
That's right. So, yeah, I don't think so, then. No, I can't think of anything.
No?
So secret, I don't even know.
Okay. I'm also here with Rachel Rubin.
Hey.
Are you in a secret society?
No. I was in the International Thespian Society in high school.
That's pretty exclusive.
Yeah. They painted a lot of sets.
Oh. What ties it all together is the Fish House in Jersey. There's lots of rumors that George Washington and the Marquis de Lafayette hung out at the Fish House. I spoke to my friend Kristen Burton. Actually, we direct messaged each other on Twitter. And she provided a lot of information about these secret societies. that they were really big at the time. Very exclusive, usually 20 to 30 members. And some of the founding fathers. In fact, many of the founding fathers were associated with them. I believe Hamilton was hanging out with one group and said he just couldn't keep up. Kristen said also that it's entirely possible that George Washington did hang out with them, but probably not all the time. And there is no break in his diary, in his journal.
It's a three-day stint. It didn't happen.
She spent some time in Mount Vernon at the distillery there. So she had access to all these things. The diary seems unbroken.
So either he backdated it.
Sure, we got it on
that. Or the rumors are false.
It's like it's like Nixon with the tapes.
Yeah.
I am not a drunk. So there's that, and then green tea.
Right.
Both Jay and I were like scoffing at the idea of green tea in the colonial Americas. It's actually a thing. Is that like there was a good amount of green tea in the Boston Harbor for the tea party that we all know. Many parcels of green tea were dumped into the harbor. So, green tea was a thing back then. So this is, as far as that goes, that's fully makes sense. Champagne also fits in the time period.
Oh, okay.
Not likely, because there wasn't a lot and it was pretty expensive, which is why cider was a good, you know, replacement. But now that champagne is plentiful, and cheap, often. Yeah. You know, we don't have to use cider, and we use champagne in our punches, so.
Oh, wow.
So I was able to get four. They each got 3 ounces.
Okay.
Nice.
The pungent.
Yeah?
And I opened it. I just wanted to, honestly, I just wanted to chug it. It's up for you, but smell that. You can tell it. You can tell
it. Try it.
Good. It's earthy. You know? It's earthy. I think fermented is a good way to put it. It's I'm trying to think. It's not as sweet as I expected it.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it smells sweeter than it is.
Yeah, and like I said, I wonder if letting it sit like that, I wonder what it did to it, because it's got a... It's aged. I mean, I guess rum will age. You
yeah.
know? But
it doesn't.
2 days, not in plastic. So that's interesting. I'll have to look at those ingredients again, see what we did.
Okay. So we've got the drinks in front of us. They smell delicious, but we also have small tastes of peach brandy.
Just peach brandy.
This smells like an antique store.
Really?
Yeah. It smells like candy for sure. Definitely smells like a jar of candy.
In
like
an antique store.
Oh yeah, it does.
I really get like the something old, like something slightly musty.
Really?
Yeah.
I know. What you're saying.
Yeah, it's
I
not.
Get it.
It's not like a peach ring. It's
no.
not as artificial, bright, kind of crazy in your face peach smell. But there is a fruitiness. It tastes. It reminds me like old candy. Yeah.
Like a perfumey sweet.
Yeah, that's good.
Slightly. Yeah, it smells wonderful.
It tastes good,
yeah,
too.
Oh, well, here we go.
Oh, I like this.
I could just sip this.
Yeah. Nicole's
we,
not like
we,
it.
Oh, we,
I like that.
We get a nay from Nicole.
She's got, like, the Spock eyebrow thing
yeah,
right now.
This is not my favorite at all.
This tastes like, it's like a combination of, like you said, like, hard candy and perfume and antique store.
Yeah, it tastes like when you let a peach sit out too long.
Oh yeah.
And it ripens. Ferments. It ripens to the point of sweetness and also rottenness. That's what I'm getting from this.
But it's in a glass, so it's okay.
Yeah, right. I guess it's not rotten. It's just like, yeah, fermented.
Hard candy, antique store, and what?
Perfume.
So it tastes like grandma.
Yes.
Sweet old grandma.
You heard it here first, folks. Peach brandy, the grandma of liquor.
Peach brandy for when you want to know what grandma tastes like.
I like it. I could sit and drink this.
I like it too.
It could be cold. I would like it more cold, but
probably lose a little bit of the grandma essence then.
I don't know. I think this would be good mixed with red wine and heated up.
You think?
Yeah, because like when I make mulled wine, I'll put brandy in there, but not a ton. I would like to try this like in a mixed drink with like where this is a prominent feature. I mean, because we're having it here, but there's so many other ingredients in this punch, like a Bellini maybe. Yeah, there you go. That'd be great. Like just champagne and peach brandy. Yeah, that would be great. Maybe even like a little peach puree.
So what do we think of the exclusive Fish House Punch?
This is delicious. I would like to drink a bunch of this, but like, then there wouldn't be anything else going on for a few days because I would be incapacitated.
You can tell that this is potent.
I didn't have a lot of the New Year's Punch this year, Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
Is this, how similar is this to the New Year's Punch that you make every year? Because I know the ingredients list is pretty darn similar.
Yeah, the ingredients list is pretty similar. I would say they're both about the same level of not sweet, which I like about both of them.
Yes.
This one's a little bit less citrusy.
Yeah, I was going to say yours has a little more orange flavor.
Yeah, because we peel a lot of orange rinds to put in there. But I'm liking this blend. I like the way this balances itself.
Yeah.
I might be tempted to put some nutmeg on it, like at New Year's.
Oh yeah, that would be good. Yeah, I like this.
It's not overly sweet.
No.
It doesn't taste boozy, which makes it a little dangerous.
I get it a little bit.
It's sort of, sorry, all of the flavors you expect from rum and... not even quite brandy. It's sort of the rum flavor, but without the rum bite.
Yeah, there's no... That's what I meant by not boozy is there's no burn.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
That's what I meant. Sorry.
There's it's just tart.
Yeah.
It's definitely tart, but there's not burn.
No, there's no burn. Which is what makes this dangerous. Yeah. Because you could keep drinking this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's refreshing. Mm-hmm. So you could just pound one. And not even think about it.
You'd think about it the next day, though.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not Kool-Aid and Everclear.
No.
It's not that kind of punch.
No.
No,
it still makes you feel like, you know, like you have some kind of self-worth, you know? It's like...
I'm still classy because I got this punch that has, you know, 16 ingredients in it, so...
That's right.
I'm classier than Everclear and Kool-Aid.
Give me my powdered wig now.
Yes. See, this is also the kind of punch that, I mean, especially this one, because you can really just mix up your booze and your citrus ingredients ahead of time. So if you're having a party, I mean, you really could just get a big jug, mix all your stuff, let it sit for a few days, and the party, you just decant it into a big punch bowl.
Yeah.
So which just, makes it super simple.
When you add the champagne last, right? That's the main thing.
Yeah,
when
it keeps it busy.
Yeah.
And
this is really good. I really like it.
Good for prepping ahead of time. But I know that they're also like...
Wouldn't you say this is the best of the colonial drinks we've tried so far? I don't know. Do you remember the... Let's see, we've done the Rattle Skull.
Was the Rattle Skull that, cider and...
No, that was the Stone Fence.
That was the Stone Fence.
Cider and rum. The Rattle Skull was a porter and rum.
It's okay.
Yeah,
so I like this better than
so
that
So far, in comparison, like, if we're going to group the cocktails, the forgotten cocktails that we've tried... As a rule, the colonial ones are somewhat better than some of the other obscure ones.
You think so?
I think so, because, I don't know, I like this, I like the Rattle Skull, I like the Stone Fence, if I recall correctly. But but some of these other cocktails we've tried, with a little bit more modern take, modern as in, like, 100 years ago as opposed to 200 years ago,
yeah,
you know,
mm-hmm.
aren't as successful.
Maybe that's because like prohibition cocktails were just trying so hard to hide the taste of the drain water you were drinking. Whereas colonial times, booze was so popular, you just mix it with more booze, and then you're good.
I think this is great, though, because, I mean, you take a whole bunch of booze, and you put it together, and somehow you create something that doesn't taste like fire.
Yes.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing. Because I've been sitting here trying to think of, like, actual adjectives I can use to describe this flavor. And it's mostly just like, it tastes like alcohol, but without all of the pain that alcohol tastes
like. But I feel like this is going to be something that not many people are going to have. You know, it's going to be... Like, remember when we drank the Applejack?
Sure. Yeah.
That's what people were drinking. And remember the burn?
Yeah, I did not like the Applejack. I remember that.
It was just like apple fire. And yeah.
This isn't apple-y.
Yeah.
This is fire.
This is like created by the colonial mixologist. I mean, that's what this is. Maybe it's like, maybe that's what you get when you have your own little secret high society.
America, fuck yeah. This drink won our independence, I think, right here.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
This is why we were so mad when tea was being taxed, right? Because we were like, no, our fish house punch is more expensive now.
Oh, you know that the guys who were making this, they were the ones taxing it. They were, you know, or they were actually wanting the taxes. They didn't want it to go to England. They're like, no, if you tax it, we can't tax it.
Yeah.
Because during Prohibition, nothing stopped in the fish house. They made their own hooch. Everybody had plenty of it.
Us having to go to, well, most of us having to go to, like, you know, basically a 9-to-5 job where you don't really drink all day. Sorry, I'm 50. You come and you have a drink like this, and it's just like, it'll knock you down. But those guys, like, drinking was like part of the profession.
Drinking, you did drink all day.
Yeah.
9-to-5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, they could have many of these punches and still be functional.
Your job is to be social.
Yeah.
Your job is to shake hands and to make deals. And
buy people this drink.
Or maybe functionality was more of a broad scale.
So, yeah. Well,
it was like, because everybody else was tooted, so it's like, you're not, no one's going to notice that you're inappropriate.
Well, social lubricants, they help business, you know?
Yeah. So
I want to be part of this society, except I wouldn't have been able to join.
Right, yeah. Sorry, lady.
Yeah. But I mean, they had nice drinks.
Drinks and sandwiches to serve your husband.
High society women aren't necessarily going to be doing housework all day.
No,
while their husbands are off, you know, cavorting and making social connections and, you know, furthering their business or political gains, are the women sitting at home just drunk all the time too? Just, like, hanging out with each other at somebody's house?
I like to think so.
These are things I want to know. We hear about, like, you know, man history all the time, and even, like, you know, the obscure history about, like, you know, the secret societies, and that's how, like, you know, politicians got connections and all that kind of stuff. It's still all man history. Like, what are the ladies doing?
How about this for an answer? The women were doing things that they didn't want anybody else to know, and so there's no history.
Okay, I like that.
I still feel we haven't, like, very well described how this cocktail tastes.
No.
But I'm not... I'm really
good.
Having trouble finding the words.
You're kind of right. It's kind of a indescribable, just good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's amazing.
It's not amazing, but I would say it's very good. It's not blow your socks off, oh my God, but it's very good. I would, if I didn't know better, I would have several of these.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a strong citrus taste.
No,
it doesn't taste like anything. It doesn't taste like pineapple. It doesn't taste like apple teeny. You know, like, it doesn't... It's hard to compare it to anything.
It's pleasantly tart, with very little aftertaste.
It's tart and musky. That's it.
Yeah.
But it's clean though. It doesn't. You don't have like a bad aftertaste or anything. You want to keep revisiting that tart. Is it sweet? No, not really. Oh, it's good. Nice, clean. I should try another sip.
Yeah.
That's my experience so far, and it's very strong.
So what do you think, Nicole? Is this a winner?
Yes.
Even though you didn't like the peach brandy?
I did not like the peach brandy. I am so happy that it is disguised behind all these other flavors it has blended with.
So that's one win. How about you, Kevin?
Total win.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to keep taking sips and being like, yep, like it.
Yeah.
I gotta try that again. Yep, like it.
And you, Rachel?
I really like this one.
Yeah.
This is one of the best ones that we've done on the show while I've been doing it with you. I take a little sip of the peach brandy straight, and then like, wait a minute, so like my palate is cleared. Then once I know what the flavor is, I can taste a little bit of it in the drink.
Yeah.
But it's not overpowering at all. Yeah, it's very background, very subtle. It's good.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a good one too. For me, I find it refreshing. There is citrus in here, I think, right?
Yeah.
And it's not something that I can really detect. Usually when it's a very citrusy drink, I find it not relaxing, very intense, and I don't find it refreshing at all.
Did you guys follow the calculation for two or three drinks?
Yeah.
Okay, so you did just this exactly?
Yeah.
There's only an ounce of lemon juice in there.
Yeah, okay.
So it's really not very
So it's very subtle.
Yeah. And I think it's offset by the champagne.
And the rum, God. Yeah.
Yeah, it just blends so well. You don't get any one flavor predominant. Like, maybe the rum flavor, but again, it doesn't taste like that burning rum flavor that we're used to. It just tastes like the subtle aspects of it.
Yeah, even the champagne is not very forward in this. It just kind of provides like a nice...
There's a little effervescence to it.
Yeah. Provides effervescence and refreshing, but not... It's not predominant.
No. Well, excellent.
I would drink this again. I recommend that people...
It's a lot of work.
I recommend everybody, in order to not go through all the work and spend as much money, everyone should descend upon the Schuylkill Fish House, beat on the door, demand entrance to get the good stuff.
Start a revolution.
That's right.
Start a revolution. I think that this is a great... Making it in like the bowl quantity, making it actually a true punch, I think that this would be great. Like if you had, like Cameron, a lot of obscure ingredients in your house, you could supplement with, a bottle of rum and a bottle of Hennessy and really like make a big batch of punch and like make like, add all the alcohol and the lemon juice like you did a few days prior, mix it up in a big jar, and then just
or baptismal font.
Right. And then put it
right.
Then add your champagne when the people come over.
Yeah.
I think that's really handy because I think I know that's what you guys do too when you make your punch on New Year's. It's like you add all the base ingredients and then you put in the effervescent stuff. So when you have your party, it's like minimal work for the hosts. And maximum payoff for all the people getting drunk.
That's right.
Yep. Throw a party, you serve punch.
Yes.
Yep. It's a group drink. It's a crowd pleaser.
It's an event.
Yeah. Creamy and Cup also did punch.
I guess that pretty much wraps it up. We've done the full Fish House Punch story, and now we've even tasted it.
And now we're kind of drunk.
That's now it's...
working.
It's working. I can't feel my lips. Okay, so check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. If you want to see the artwork, go to Pinterest. Because we have all the covers up. And they look awesome. And I guess that's it. Keep following us and listening to the show. If you're into thinking and drinking, let us blacken your liver.
Raise your shoulders and shut your eyes.
Thanks for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I'd like to thank Jason Cruz for researching our content, our regular tasting team, Rachel Rubin, Kevin Rutajczyk, Bethany Lang, and Nicole Pizzini, for joining me in the grueling task of tasting the cocktails we discuss. The Brixton and their bartender, Michael Donnelly, for letting us cavort in their liquid playground, Dan Cruz for art direction and editing, and Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. Go to blackliverproject.com to see the show archive, become a member, contribute to the project, and get in touch with us. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter to get the latest news and as-it-happens updates during live events. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, let us blacken your liver. Staying strong, a Russian for the break. Will the decisions come up into the river, down into the river's eye? Yes, I can go on.